It wasn't like any funeral or burial or post-burial I'd ever imagined. Not that I'd ever really imagined those things. But as I watched the cars line up along the curb, freshly arrived from the cemetery, all I could think about was the incredible strangeness of the funeral, burial, and now post-burial we were all enduring. Everyone was piling out of their cars. They formed a kind of procession that moved over neatly mowed grass to the sidewalk. They made their way up the sloped driveway to the stone walkway and approached the tan brick house and the unlocked screen door that belonged to what was left of my family. I hung back, leaving the hosting duties to my mother, a more than capable committee of one. She was standing next to the white maple coffee table where she'd stacked coasters and yellow square cocktail napkins. She'd cooked, too, because the days of people bringing over casseroles and platters of food to fortify our bereaved family had ended years ago. Mrs. Nielsen, though, from next door, had come by with a vanilla pound cake earlier. The same pale, bland, aggressively bumpy cake she'd brought us when we moved to Bloomfield Hills 15 years ago. And then again, years later, after my dad vanished. My grandmother made a spot for the cake on the dining table, where we'd set up a crowded buffet of roasted chicken, sliced and splayed artfully on two big platters with sprigs of parsley. There were also boiled potatoes, green beans, and assorted sweets. I hefted the cake up next to a platter of brownies and chocolate chip cookies that my mother had bought at the A&P. She was a master of most of the homemaking arts. She crocheted scarves and sewed complete outfits with personalized labels embroidered with "Created by Deborah Armstead." She could pack a good lunch and cook an even better dinner, but she'd never been much of a baker. "Cut her some slack," my father used to say in a kind of backhanded defense of her various sagging cakes and soggy pies. When I met her, she was just as likely to burn water as not. My mother was standing, perfect posture tall, in the living room, a pale yellow room made brighter by the scent of hyacinths carried in on the breeze. She was smoothing her navy blue skirt and matching jacket, smiling as the first of the visitors came through the door. Her long, blue-black hair that people had admired for as long as I could remember was pulled into a neat bun. She was graying at her temples. I'd noticed the graying earlier that morning as I sat on the bathroom counter, watching her get ready and listening to her lay out the plans for the day. Only partly listening, actually. I'd mostly been enjoying the steam facial from the mug of coffee I had cradled in my hands until she asked, "You think they'll come? You know, with how long it's been?" "Yes." I wanted to add, "They'll come precisely because it's been so long, and because this is strange." But I didn't say that. I didn't want to risk an argument. "It's time to try and go on." "You definitely seem ready to do that," I murmured into my coffee mug, at risk of starting that argument I thought I wanted to avoid. We regarded each other's reflections in the bathroom mirror. Her honey-colored skin was clear and smooth and not made up yet. She looked younger than her 45 years. I, on the other hand, looked like an aging hooker who'd had a particularly bad night. My puffy-eyed face was a giant smear of blush and mascara from the day before because I'd been too wiped out to wash after my 10-hour drive home. My mother in the mirror was working her jaw, like she was biting back a particularly bitter critique. "What do you think I should be doing, Trinity?" she asked finally. "Not burying an empty casket, for starters." "God damn it!" She stopped for a moment, closing her eyes and gripping the counter like she might collapse. "He's gone." "I know that." "Do you?"